Maybe there is something the matter with me. I just don't see how a world that makes such wonder...
You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Stuff, isn't it neat? Wouldn't you think my collection's complete? Wouldn't you think I'm the girl who has everything? Look at this trove, treasures untold. How many wonders can one cavern hold? Looking around here, you think, sure, she's got everything. I've got gadgets and gizmos aplenty. I've got who's its and what's its galore. You want thingamabobs? I got 20. But who cares? No big deal. I want more. I want to be where the people are. I want
to
see.
Folks, this song has meant a great deal to me over the years. It sounds like I'm being facetious, but I actually fell in love with The Little Mermaid. And it was a hard time admitting that to my wife, believe it or not. It really was. She felt relieved after I told her it was just a cartoon character, but no one best, really, for providing both the singing and the speaking voice of Princess Ariel in Disney's The Little Mermaid and its sequels. Jodie Benson is singing in the background. Have a listen. Here comes the crescendo. Here we go.
Wandering free, wish I could be part of that world. What would I give?
Well, I'm nervous today,
he's nervous.
Tim.
He's nervous, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't think I've ever lost words like
really?
This.
Even around me.
Well, I know that's true, but I've never been in love with you, Tim.
No, you've been mostly nauseous around me.
Joining us today is Tony-nominated Broadway star and Disney voice actress, the one and only Jodie Benson. Jodie, so good to have you on the show. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Drew, for having me. I really appreciate it.
I'm sorry for that awkward introduction.
It wasn't awkward at all.
Well, it was for me, let me tell you.
I've been working with him for a few years. That was really awkward.
You've never seen me flustered like that, have you, Tim?
No.
It's very sweet to actually just sit back and listen to the song. It's been a long time since I've listened to the recording, so...
Really?
It was really fun, actually.
You don't have that as track number one in your iPod?
No, I don't. No. I don't really have an iPod.
No, I know. You don't actually listen to music unless it's orchestral classical.
That's right. I don't usually listen to music. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It is weird.
I guess I'm just different. When I'm alone, which is very rarely when I'm alone... I enjoy the silence because I can hear the still small voice of the Lord, so I have to have that quiet. I'm kind of a contemplative as far as that goes.
Well, and you would also find yourself analyzing far too much when it came to music and people singing. And
yep, my jaw, it's so difficult. When I hear other people sing, either recording or live.
Especially country music.
No, it doesn't matter. I mean, I enjoy all types of music, but my jaw locks into a position and I start to formulate my mouth as if I were singing along. And I do it not even realizing I'm doing it. And it gives me such a headache.
Wow.
So it's kind of a strange thing. I just start to... form the proper intonations in my body. I don't know why I do that.
Wow.
So yeah, so I haven't heard that recording in a long time.
Can I suggest maybe therapy? I don't know, something. Listen, were you ever a cheerleader for the Boylan Central Titans? Or maybe there's no such thing as Catholic cheerleaders, is there?
Yes, there were cheerleaders. I was actually on the pom-pom squad.
Okay.
Yes, and we were the dancer/pom-pom girls that came and did the halftime
show
for football and basketball.
Jodie, on your way to becoming a lawyer, you ended up on Broadway. You want to explain that transition to us?
In between Broadway and Mermaid, you mean?
No, in between being in college and getting onto Broadway.
Oh, okay. Let's see, I have to think back.
Think way.
My freshman summer of college at Millikan University, I was 17, turning 18 that summer. I started college a year and a half earlier, and I met my husband at Opryland Theme Park in Nashville, Tennessee, the summer of 1980, I think. that we met and fell in love, and I went back to college for my sophomore year. But in the meantime, on Christmas break, I had auditioned, and Ray had as well, for a review in Chicago. And the girl broke, the leading girl, who was, you know, probably 10 or 15 years older than I was at the time, broke her ankle, and they called me in March.
You didn't do it. You didn't do it, Tonya Harding, did you?
No, no, no.
Okay.
Right. No, never met her.
Okay.
And they called me up, and they said, you came, you know, at Christmas break to audition, and we need you next week. I said, well, I'm a sophomore in college, and I'm in the middle of my semester. And they were like, it's $1,000 a week, take it or leave it. And I took it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we did not have any funding, and I was putting myself through school. And my mom was not too thrilled about me leaving college. Neither were several professors at all. In fact, they said, you'll never amount to anything. This will be the worst decision of your life. And it was my voice teacher who told me, you know what, Jody? I think you're ready for this. And guess what? We'll be here. We'll be here. We'll wait for you. You know, come on back. The door will always be open. So I took the job, and I left, and did that tour with the show, and took this girl's place, which was a non-equity, and then did not go back to college, went straight to New York, and on the 10th day got my first Broadway show. So, you know, it was just a God-ordained path. Went back 10 years later during Crazy for You, and crammed 2 years into a semester, and studied after the show from midnight till 3 a.m., and went back and did my cap and gown and graduated summa cum laude.
Good for you. Good for you. Well, you were working on a Broadway production called Smile, which I think had a fairly short run, but as sort of a consolation prize, one of the show's producers, Howard Ashman, was also working for Disney on this project called The Little Mermaid.
Yes.
And did he not ask the girls to submit sort of anonymous tapes of their rendition of Part of This World?
Yes, he invited all 16 of us to go and make a reel-to-reel at the audition. It was the old reel-to-reel. And to put down a snippet of the song, Part of Your World, and a snippet of the dialogue of what each one of us thought that she would sound like. And, of course, none of us had ever done voiceover or animation, so it was completely foreign to me. And then they kind of submitted all those tapes really without our pictures and resumes because they wanted it to be, the voices were not going to be announced who they were.
Right.
It was just going to run at the end credits. It was going to remain quiet, you know, a secret. So that's kind of how they sent it off, and it was a year, you know, that went by, and I got a call, and of course I'd completely forgotten what I had auditioned for, and started flying back and forth, but it was all very quiet. And when I told people what I was doing, back then animation was the worst job on the totem pole. It was for has-beens. And so when I told people that I was doing a movie, and this Disney movie, they said, oh my gosh, I guess your career's gone down. You know, I guess you don't have any more life on Broadway. My mom and my family, and they thought, well, you're not in the movie. You know, we're not going to see you in the movie. And I was like, no, I'm a voice. And it was like, well, maybe you'll get a real job next time, you know. So it was, I stopped telling people about what I was doing and didn't talk about it. And about 40 days before the movie came out, Jeffrey Katzenberg got all the reviews and the notices saying from the critics and the packages that were going out and the screenings, it was getting a really good response. So about 40 days before, they called up and said, you know what, we're going to send you out on a press tour, like 25 cities in 20 days, and we're going to promote this film. And I thought, well, I didn't think you wanted us to be, you know, even recognized or our names or anything. They said, well, we're going to do something different. So boom, when the movie came out, of course, everybody called. You know, why didn't you tell us you were in it? And it's this big, huge hit. And I said, don't you guys remember making fun of my job?
Yeah, exactly.
So,
well, when it did come out, I remember, now maybe I'm wrong in this, but were there not some of the sort of right-wing fundamentalists, you know, sort of the Christian right group that, did they get upset at this movie, or was it just stuff like Tubby, what were those guys? Teletubbies.
Teletubbies?
Yeah, were they angry at Little Mermaid for maybe having a witch in it or something like that? Or?
Well, they were angry at me for working for Disney. So when I would do my press things, the SBA really attacked me a lot on live radio. You know, it really put me in a position where I stood my ground with my faith. You know, listen, Jesus hung out with a lot of interesting people, and most of the people that he hung out with would be considered sinful, and they weren't appropriate, and they weren't, you know, fitting in this box. And so God had really called me to be part of this company and a part of this film, and I thought, you know, I need to be here. I'm light. You know, I could be light in a dark place. So I had to deal with a lot of difficult situations throughout
crazy.
That period of time.
I'm so sorry for that. That is
that's okay.
That's
you know,
goofy.
I mean, I understood where they were coming from and respectful of it, of course. I said, but listen, guys, you know, God has placed a handful of Christians over at Disney, and let me tell you, the light is spreading. You know, we now have a Bible study over there, and that would never have happened on the grounds of the studio before, to actually be able to meet. So there's so many wonderful things that happened after that.
Well, speaking of Walt Disney, and of course these people being upset that you were doing something for Walt Disney, if you had the chance to sit down and have a chat with somebody, if you had to choose between Hans Christian Andersen or Walt Disney, because, I mean, that was Hans Christian Andersen, that was his story.
Right.
And, of course, Disney made it into the, well, really, I think they brought the Broadway production aspect
yes.
back into a Disney animation, a full feature.
Right. And that's Howard. That's really Howard's. He is pretty much the reason the second golden age of animation even began.
Really?
Because he gave Alan that job. Disney was not going to hide. They did not want Alan. They wanted a different composer. And Howard said, we come as a package or I leave, you know. So he's really responsible for bringing Alan. And the two of them together brought the Broadway musical and the I Want songs and all of this to the animated feature film. And Jeffrey Katzenberg had the vision with, you know, Peter Schneider and Roy Disney to make that dream come true. And that has changed the face of animation. I mean, look at the awards. We have an Oscar category now for animated feature films that did not exist.
And you know, let's talk about this past Academy Awards. I mean, Hugh Jackman, the Song and Dance Man from Australia, brought back the Broadway number. I mean, that was
musical.
That was
yep.
fantastic.
Yeah, he did a great job.
I thoroughly enjoyed this year's.
I did too. I enjoyed his whole participation in it. But so to see where we came from, I mean, when we were nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Picture in the comedy department, we were shocked. I mean, animated feature film, a cartoon, you know, it was a dirty word back then, a cartoon. Nobody did that. Oh, my goodness. It was the worst job to have. So
well,
look where we are now.
Good
I
for
mean,
you.
It's amazing, and that's because of this film.
Okay, Hans Christian Andersen or Walt Disney?
Walt. Oh, my goodness. Absolutely, hands down. He passed away the year that I was born, and I have always just had such admiration for him. What an amazing man. And just knowing Roy, his nephew, and how much I love Roy and how much I respect him and just think he's such a fantastic man. I'm sure he's just like his uncle, you know, would have been. And just to hear his heart when I hear stories about Walt from Roy and the heart that he had for children's entertainment and the things that he wanted for the studio, I would have just... we would have been on the same page.
I was chatting with Dean Jones a little while ago, and I think if I get this...
I love him.
what a warm, sincere guy
he's one
he
of
is.
Our, he and Lori are the reason my husband and I got back together again.
Really?
I mean, they are the instrumental couple. There were three couples that ministered to us when we were separated for 18 months, and Dean and Lori... we're huge in that.
Oh, that's neat. So, that's good to hear.
They're amazing.
Well, I think Dean said to me in a conversation that we were talking about Walt Disney and the direction it was going, and it had just started to turn around, and, you know, there was a season there where Dean felt that Walt would be rolling over in his grave.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really coming back to where Walt wanted it originally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you get that same feeling?
Yep, I do. You know, with Miramax and stuff, we were just going down the wrong road, and it was, bad road.
Yeah.
But things have changed, and there are a lot of wonderful people over at the studio. I know it gets cleaned out quite a bit, you know, with the economy. There's firings, hirings going on nonstop. But there are a lot of people that really care about good entertainment that are over at the studio.
That's good.
So.
That's good. Again, on the phone with Jody Benson, otherwise known as Princess Ariel, folks. Julie Andrews or Barbara Streisand, who would you like to have a latte with?
Well, I have been blessed to have a wonderful experience with Julie Andrews, Miss Andrews.
Yeah, on the set of Enchanted, right?
No, not on that movie, but we have met at Walt Disney World at various events, and so I have met her several times, conversed with her, so I'm going to have to say Barbara. Although I have an autographed picture from her.
Nice.
The only one I have, the only autograph I have, a friend got it for me for a birthday a few years ago, and wonderful, so I'd love to sit down with her since I've never met her. And I'd love to meet Celine Dion. I went to her concert. I brought my mother for her 75th birthday, my sister for her 50th, and bought them tickets to Vegas, and we went. And, you know, we don't gamble or anything like that, but we went to specifically see her show. And I would have given anything to have been able to go backstage to meet her.
We take great pride in this country about two things, hockey and making fun of Celine Dion.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, those are the two things that we really love
to do. I think she's amazing.
And we also love getting bronze medals at the Olympics.
Oh, okay. Because it's such a pretty color.
Yes, it is. Of course, that's why we do it. It reminds us of autumn here. So, Jody, which one gives you more of a feeling of professional accomplishment? All the Little Mermaid stuff or the Tony nomination? Because I would think that creatively there would almost be more professional respect from your peers for the work you did creating the starring role of Polly Baker in the Gershwin musical Crazy for You.
Well, that's going to be hard because all aspects of what I get to share my gifts I love because of the relationships that are surrounding those experiences. So I cannot pick between those two. They are both very rewarding in completely different ways and are a great way for me to express myself. So I can't choose.
I asked you a stumper. My apologies for that.
No, that's okay. I can't choose.
Okay, let me ask you an easier one. Is it true that during the filming of the movie Enchanted that you actually ditched Patrick Dempsey for your daughter's birthday party?
Well, it came about kind of in an interesting way. I didn't ditch him.
Okay.
I told my agent I cannot go on those days. You know, films, I don't know much about films because I'd never done one before. This was my first film with my as a person, showing myself. So when they call, like, you know, I don't know, 5 days ahead, a child's birthday party's done. It's planned. And there's not much I can do about it, and I need to be there. So I said, I can't. I can't make it. And they said, well, you're going to lose the part. I said, well, that's okay. You know, that's all right, because Kevin Lima was, you know, they called me and asked me to be a part of it. I didn't audition for it. I haven't invested anything in it. So that's cool. You know, I totally respect that, but I can't. And they said, well, you know, Patrick's doing a television show. I didn't know who he was. So they said, he's doing this big television show, and he has to work certain days. I said, well, that's cool. You know, he's got to do what he's got to do for he and his family, and I got to do what I got to do. So then they called back and they said, listen, what if we move it to this, and we get you on the 10 p.m. flight and you shoot all day for 12 hours, you get the last flight out, could you do that and be back home at midnight and then the party's the next day at 11 a.m.? I said, I can absolutely do that, but I'm going to tell you now that if they're not done, I'm going to leave the set. So you all make the decision and I will respect whatever you guys decide. And they called back and they said, we're going to make that work. So I didn't ditch him.
Okay.
I just asked for accommodations, which then they had to go, I guess, back to his show, and he had to shoot scenes differently. I don't know what he had to do. But...
Well, you see, in my way of thinking, I mean, you're the one that sings Part of Your World. He should make accommodations for you.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's very sweet. I mean, it's just so random because I did not know who he was. I thought I was doing a movie with Patrick Stewart, and I know who Patrick Stewart is. So I'm looking for this guy, this bald-headed guy on the set, and I don't see him. And this guy's walking towards me, and then I'm like, Patrick Duffy. Patrick Duffy from, you know, whatever it's called.
Man from Atlantis, Dallas?
Dallas.
Yeah.
Because he's got dark hair.
Do you remember him from Man from Atlantis?
No. Oh, yes, I do, actually.
Remember the webbed hands? And
yes. Yeah. So he's walking closer and closer to me, and he puts out his hand. He goes, hi, I'm Patrick Dempsey. I said, hi, I'm Jody. It's nice to meet you. And I'm looking around like, who the heck is this?
Oh,
this
no.
is not at all who I thought it was.
Oh,
and then
man.
This other guy that I'm doing the thing with, he goes, he's in a show called Grey's Anatomy. Do you know that? I'm like, no, never saw that. I don't watch TV. you know, he's like, God, what planet are you on? So, so bad.
Well, maybe you were just getting into your character as tour guide Barbie. You see, you just kind of were working on that.
I don't know, but I didn't know what I was doing. And I told him, I said, listen, I've never done a film before, so just push me around where you need me to go.
Good.
And stuff. So they were very nice to me, and I had a really good time. But I kept putting my hand in front of the camera, and Kevin, the director's like, can you not use your hands? I said, I'm Italian. I don't know. He goes, well, we've got cameras over here. I said, Kevin, you're talking to a girl that doesn't know what the heck you're saying, so just speak English. Where's the camera? And just tell me what to do. Just tell me what to do, and I'll do it, you know? I don't know what I'm doing.
Oh, man.
So well, it was a very fun time.
I made mention there briefly of tour guide Barbie. Of course,
yes.
Toy Story 2, you
yes.
are tour guide Barbie.
Yes.
And Ken, folks, Ken was played by the Caped Crusader himself, Batman, Michael Keaton.
Well, actually, Toy Story 2 is our project. And then if there's anything in the future, I'm on a gag order and I can't talk about it.
Okay,
I get in big trouble.
I won't ask.
But Toy Story 2, yes, was an amazing experience with John Lasseter. He's absolutely brilliant. He creates the lines on the spot. And we just played with Barbies and recorded. It was the most fun I've ever had in the recording studio was with him.
Oh,
so
man.
Much fun. And
did you get a chance to play with John Ratzenberger at all?
No, I record pretty much everything since 1986. I'm by myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is really not the way that I like to do it, because with Mermaid we had the whole cast, and it's just so great to get to work off of each other as actors, but that's just not possible, I guess, nowadays with everybody's schedules and stuff.
Sure,
so
sure.
That's unfortunate.
I had, listen to me here, I'm going to name drop. I had breakfast with John Ratzenberger down in Studio City, and I can't remember the name of the deli, the big deli. Anyway, John.
Jerry's.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, good for you.
I'm an L.A. girl. So.
Oh, are you? Oh, okay. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
We moved from L.A. to Georgia, so I know Jerry's.
Right. Well, boy, there's a guy. I mean, he has been in so many animated
movies. Yes, he's good. He's so great.
And what a beautiful heart. And the guy is in love with Jesus like you are. Mm. I mean, it's just, anyway, it's a good,
that's
a good,
neat.
A good combo. I'd like to see you two work together a lot more.
Yes, it would be fun. I wish... That's always my request when I go to work is, can I work with, you know, the people I'm saying the lines with?
Yeah.
No, that's not possible.
But Jody, you had 15 years of performing before the kids came along.
Yes.
And that all sounds very planned and purposeful, was it?
No, it wasn't. You know, when Ray and I got married, I really never had that maternal thing. And I really didn't know biologically with health issues if I could ever have children. So I guess I just didn't set my heart on that. And it was when we were doing Crazy for You, and all of a sudden, something went off in my heart, and I started journaling a lot and talking a lot to my pastor's wife about it. I said, I feel like God's calling me to become a mother, and I really don't know how to tell my husband this because I think we've just planned on not having children. And I broke the news to Ray, and it took about a year for him to get on board with that. And I said, I'm ready to leave the show because I don't want to do 8 shows a week and have a family. So I see us moving to Los Angeles and settling down and starting a family and working in the studio, which is more conducive to being a mom. Hmm. And he's just looking at me like, this has got to be God because you are not the same woman that I married, you know. And boy, what an amazing journey it has been for us in that the greatest blessings for us are these two kids.
But it didn't start off that smooth, did it? There was a miscarriage early on?
Yeah, we've lost 2 children, actually. But the way timing is, if I would have had those 2 children that have already passed away, I would not have these 2. So the timing of it all, and just to see, and we talk with the kids.
That's,
you know,
neat.
They can't wait to meet their brother or their sister, you know, and in heaven, and they're looking forward to that day whenever it happens. But they also know how special it was that God, you know, really ordained the 2 of them to actually be here with us on Earth. So it's amazing.
We have
so much fun.
Your daughter Delaney, I think, about 8 now, and McKinley, he's almost 11, is he?
He turned 10 in January,
okay.
And he's just an amazing young man.
But he probably, even though he just turned 10 in January, he's probably considering himself almost 11. You know, the boys like that kind of terminology.
Yeah, he doesn't talk about 11, but he does talk about, Mom, I'm 10 now. Young man, you know. I'm a young man. I'm not a baby anymore. And he's really sweet with me when I do things that are still maybe like he's my little baby. He'll kind of just look at me, and he'll say, I'm 10. And I'm like, you're right, buddy. You're right. You know, I totally trust you. You just, you know,
step up. Here's the car.
Yeah. Well, you know what? But I mean, there's things that mommy's gotta cut. You know, mommy's gotta cut those little strings each day, and it's a process right now. It's a big process for me personally, because I'm very very protective of the kids. So.
Well, when the original Little Mermaid was released, you didn't have any children.
No.
Right, and when number two was released, your daughter was in your tummy.
Yep, she was singing along with me.
And now, if I get things right from Monday to Thursday, are you still a reluctant homeschool mom?
Not reluctant. I love it.
But you didn't start off loving it.
No, it was God's calling. It was not my calling. I never would have ever on the radar thought about homeschooling ever. I wasn't going to wear Birkenstocks and not shave my legs and wear a denim jumper.
Yeah, or grow your own clothes.
Yeah, grow my own clothes and make my own diaper wipes. So
yes.
I was like, oh, my goodness. And we put, you know, my little boy was 2 years, 8 months and went to a, you know, real fancy schmancy Christian preschool that we, you know, paid an arm and a leg for. And after 6 months, he was, he had just turned three. And we didn't need to do that, but that's just what everybody does in Los Angeles. And that's what everybody told us. And we were first-time parents and we wanted to do the right thing. We thought that's what the right thing was. And he looked up at me, and after he cried and cried and cried every single day of the 2 days a week that I dropped him off, and the headmistress said, he just needs to come more. You know, he's got separation anxiety. He just needs to come more. I said, no, I don't think he needs to come more, but something's not right. And he looked up at me, and he dumbed himself down being there. He stopped talking. He stopped communicating. And he looked up at me one day, and he said, Mommy, if you promise me this is the last day I have to be here, I'll make it till 12. And he was three, and I looked at him, I said, buddy, it's your last day. So I took him home. I made a school at our house, didn't know what I was doing, and tried to get him into a kindergarten program, and we could not find a right match. You know, my little boy's IQ is close to 150, so we did not find a match for him, and I didn't have any choice, and God just put it on my heart, you can do this. I'm like, oh, my goodness, so... And then with my daughter, it just fell into place, and she wanted to, too, and we're in our sixth year, and they're great. We have tons of fun and travel together and
nice.
Experience.
But before people think that you're, you know, Susie Homemaker, this perfect mother, you're probably not a Proverbs 31 girl. You're probably Proverbs 32, right? let's clear up something. You wouldn't exactly call yourself a woman who loves to cook now, would you?
No. I don't have anything to do with the kitchen. The kitchen's my husband's domain. He designed the kitchen at our house.
Right.
He does all the cooking, all the grocery shopping, anything to do with food. Now, when he's gone, we survive. You know, we survive, the kids and I, not on junk food.
Okay.
You know, we do survive with our organic fruits, and we can make it.
Do they make organic Pop-Tarts?
Is that, yes, they do.
Okay.
They do. Annie's, and they're strawberry, and they're really good.
Okay, all right.
So we found those. We found everything.
Right.
So even in Georgia, we have it.
Are the kids still taking the piano lessons? How's that going?
Yes. Great. The recital is this Sunday.
Oh.
Yes. Very excited about that. So they love their piano. Soccer started. I got two soccer players now. My son transferred from baseball because his sister was having so much fun. He wanted to have as much fun as she was with the big old team running around.
Good.
So we just got their soccer calendars. I'm in snowy Omaha doing concerts this weekend. So my husband and I are even talking on the phone about their soccer schedules, lining those up for the next 8 weeks. So it'll be fun.
Good. Can you paint a concise, creative picture of your summers on the lake in Georgia?
Ooh, very fun. We love to open up the house and the reservations start. All the friends and family come and they claim a week. We have a house that we built on purpose to house extra families. So we are the vacation destination for a lot of our friends in the ministry, and most all of our friends are blue collar, you know, and ministry folks. So you're talking about this needs to be a great vacation spot for them and their kids.
Good.
And we whip them around on the boat, and we've got a little wave runner, wakeboard, water ski, tube, swim, fish, and we're lake rats for the summer.
Nice.
So Reservations have started.
Nice, nice. Boy, you'd fit in quite nicely here in Ontario with all the lakes and cottage country we have up here. So Ray is from Alabama. You're from Illinois. Did you guys meet while working together on the touring production of Joseph and the Amazing
No, we met at Nashville at Opryland Theme Park, and then we did get hired on that national tour. That's when I got my equity card. We got hired the same day, but they did not know. They hired us as a dating couple, and neither of us knew each other got the tour. Until we saw each other and met up at a dinner that night and told each other that we got it. And we went on tour and we broke up.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Went on tour and broke up.
Yeah. Speaking of country music. But I understand there was a bit of missionary dating going on, right? That Ray led you to this Jesus stuff?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. I was raised a very devout Catholic. And I loved everything about that. It was a great experience for me growing up, but I did not have a personal relationship. And when I went into the box for my confession, I asked the priest why I had to do this, and then he called me to his office afterwards. I think I was in sixth grade or so, or seventh grade, and he says, "You ask too many questions."
Oh.
I said, "Well, I'm just curious. I feel like I could talk to Jesus. Do I still have to go through you?" And he called my mom and just said, "She's asking too many questions." And that's when the first trigger went off that I went, you know what? I can do this, but I think I'm missing something more personal. And I didn't know I was missing it until Ray introduced that to me and said, "Do you have a personal relationship with Christ? You know, do you talk to him?" I said, "Yes, I do, but the priest said I'm not really supposed to do that." And we were in California, and he brought me to a little church, and I sat down with a pastor, Neuenschwander, and his wife, and it was quite a spiritual battle, very much a spiritual battle, and finally made that surrender. So,
What a story. I want to read to you a quote that I guess this is one of the many interviews you've done over the years. When I was recording The Little Mermaid, I was really struggling. I gave my husband every reason to divorce me. I was leading a double life. I had recorded 3 albums and had been on the cover of some Christian magazines, yet I was ready to take my own life. Even though Christian counselors advised Ray to divorce me, he stayed the course. His love and commitment saved my life. I had to surrender and recommit my life to Christ and let God take over. When I asked God to take charge, it completely restored my life and our marriage. It's mind-boggling. I look at our family, our life. None of it would be here without Jesus and Ray. Maybe one day I'll have a portion of the servant heart my awesome husband has. It sounds like you've been through some gunk.
Yes. I hadn't heard that interview in a long time, so caught me off guard with that. Yes, we have. You know, everybody's got their stories and everybody's got their journeys. Yes, I have had my share, as many people have, of a lot of stuff that, you know, through childhood and comes up as you get older. And married Ray when I was very young and hadn't had an opportunity to work through the losses and issues. And with many, many years of counseling, it really took its toll for me to finally get to the end. And once I got to the end and let go was the great step that the Lord grabbed me, you know, jumping off the cliff and knowing that he was holding on and that the Lord was holding on to me. And like I say, if it weren't for Glenn and Linda Keene, I mean, and Dean and Lori Jones, Max and Virginia Wolf, Buster, Gina Holmes, you know, these 4 couples that just walked alongside. And God just orchestrated for me to be part of The Little Mermaid, primarily to meet Glenn Keane, you know, the world's greatest animator. And had I not met him when all of my life fell apart with my husband, I would not have had food or shelter. You know, he and his wife took me in and put me up in their home for 3 months while I was suicidal. You know, so when I look at the fact that God chose me to be part of this film, his whole plan was not about the film. You know, his plan was about relationships. And he knew that Glenn and Linda and Dean and Lori and these couples was how I was going to meet them and how he was going to set me up. and protect me, you know, during the course of the trials that Ray and I went through. And when we were able to walk through that, you know, again, my husband, I always say that when I grow up, I want to be more like him. You know, he's one in a million. He's really an amazing man. And
I think you've described him as a silent server.
He is. He is a silent servant's heart.
Yeah.
He is one of those people that you're blessed when you are around him, and I feel incredibly honored and blessed to be his wife. I still battle with sometimes looking at him going, why, you know, why did you stay? Why did you stay? So, you know, I still need to kind of process through, I guess, some forgiveness issues that come up randomly.
So is that where that emotion came from, Jody?
I think hearing the story and just remembering, I don't think about it very often. You know, with the kids now, our life is a day-to-day walk of praise and blessing, and we live, our motto in our family is to savor the moment, live in the moment, live today. And so I don't think about the past all that much, especially when it comes to do with the trials. And I think just hearing that interview from years ago, just the emotion of gratefulness, not the emotions of sadness, it's the emotions of gratefulness and thankfulness that God spared my life, you know, that I'm still alive and that I was able to, you know, be a mom and to experience this journey is, there's really no reason I should be here alive, really. There are so many ways that the consequence, as I'm reading in this book right now, the consequences of my sin equal total and utter destruction. That's the only thing that they equal. And when you pile them all together, and there's no other option except total destruction and death. But because they have been nailed to the cross, you know, I am completely free. So the emotion comes from, I think, just being incredibly grateful that God held on to me. So.
Jody Benson is on the phone with us, and I want to thank you for your vulnerability, your willingness to be authentic with us. It's that's important from, I think, everyone's point of view. You know, a lot of people know you as Little Mermaid, Ariel, Princess Ariel. A lot of people know you as a Jesus gal, because you're pretty forthcoming about that. But when they see and hear you in the media, you know, you don't want to turn things into a Jerry Springer moment all the time.
Oh, yeah, right.
Right?
Exactly.
So there's no point going over and rehashing the stuff. And but they don't hear that pain that you have gone through, that you have processed. They see the perky, positive homeschooling mom stuff, maybe. You know what I mean?
Right. You know, but it's really neat. Like my life verse is, you know, John 15:5. I'm really nothing without him. So I have no words of wisdom. You know, I have no great knowledge. I have Jesus, and that's all I need. And he's enough. You know, so when I need to open my mouth as I pray before an interview and I just say, Lord, you know, let me be light and salt. I mean, that's the whole reason that I do what I do, is to be light and salt in whatever capacity, whether I'm singing a song or shaking somebody's hand after a show or talking on the phone to you. That's my prayer, is to let me be light and salt. So I certainly don't want to get in the way of whatever God's doing.
Yeah.
And if emotions come, emotions go. You know, as you call it, a vulnerability. The way I look at it is that this is me, and I love the Lord, and he needs to be glorified, not me, that's for sure. And I really don't want to get in the way of whatever it is that he has to do, you know, and whatever his plan is. I am joining him in his work on a daily basis. That's our prayer as a family, you know. Let us join you in your work today, whatever it is. Please let us be light and salt, and I don't want to miss any opportunities. I don't want to be that person that gets passed over and God uses somebody else to change a person's life because I wasn't willing. You know, I have to stop and say, Lord, please don't let me miss any opportunity today of being a part of your work. I don't want to be passed over.
Well, and you certainly haven't been. God has given you quite a platform. Princess Ariel and the Little Mermaid, Weebo in Flubber, Tour Guide Barbie in Toy Story 2, Thumbelina. You know what? I wonder if you could, I don't know whether you can do this. Is there much of a variation between those characters from a vocal point of view, from an audio point of view, or are they very similar?
Well, I guess I don't really think about it, to be honest with you.
Because, like, for example, if I was to say, okay, do a Weebo, or do Ariel, or do Barbie, or do Thumbelina, or do Polly.
I think they do have. I don't go into a place where I think technically about a voice. What I do is I go into the character.
Sure.
So immediately when I see Ariel, I can go back to the initial lines. You know, maybe he's right. Maybe there is something the matter with me. You know, I can
do it again. Do it again.
I can see her, but then. As soon as I can see Barbie, I can see John Lasseter with, you know, "Hi, I'm tour guide Barbie. Welcome to Big Al's Toy Farm. Back in 1997, short-sighted retailers did not make enough dolls to meet demand. Bye-bye. Bye-bye now. Bye-bye." But, you know, so it's not like I sit there and go, "Oh,
beautiful.
Technically I need to alter my voice like this."
No.
It's just that...
You get into character.
You just sort of play with who they are.
Yeah. Fantastic.
So it's fun. It's a really fun job. I love what I get to do.
Good
you
for
know,
you.
I really do.
Good for you. Jody, it has been an absolute pleasure and an honor to speak with you. Thank you for coming on the show. And I wish you the best. I hope God blesses you in such a way that he just freaks you right out.
Well, my prayer, and I appreciate that, is that God will just use us for his kingdom and that we will... be willing and open and able to be his vessels. That's our prayer for our family. And I do appreciate you, you know, asking me to be a part of your show. I know you've got a lot of wonderful people that get to share their light. So I just appreciate that you put me in the pot and let me be part of it.
You know, I think this is the perfect way to say goodbye to you. Have a listen to this, folks, and we'll say goodbye to Jody.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Beautiful.
Bye-bye now. Bye-bye. Now. Bye-bye.
From the blooper reel on Toy Story 2.
I know.
All right, Jody, thanks again.
Thank you, guys. Right. Thank you, listeners, and God bless you. Appreciate your time.
Bye. Okay. Are they all gone? Is everybody gone? Huh? Good. Oh my gosh, my cheeks are killing me. I can't keep smiling like this anymore. I am exhausted. I think I need a break. A little break? Okay.